I'm Lisa Mullins, and this is The World. About 20 years ago, an archivist at Harvard University's Houghton Library discovered some old boxes in the basement. There were 25 in all. They hadn't been touched in a long time. They were labeled Life in Germany Contest. As it turned out, back in the 1930s, some Harvard professors wanted to find out what life was like for Jews who were living in Germany before Hitler came to power. The professors put out a request for personal essays and got back about 260 submissions, mostly typewritten. The archivist who stumbled on them at the library called a historian friend of hers to tell him what she'd found. That historian is Thomas Dunlap. He pored over the essays and chose a few to publish in a new book called Before the Holocaust, Three German Jewish Lives, 1870 to 1939. We asked Dunlap to describe the original contest and how it came to shed new light on such a pivotal moment in history.
The title of the contest was My Life in Germany Before and After January 30th, 1933, which was, of course, the date Hitler came to power. And it was Harvard-sponsored, and there were three professors who were the driving force behind it, and they knew what was going on in Germany, and they wanted to collect testimony, as they said, about the effect of National Socialism on the German people and German society.
What was the nature of the contest?
It's an essay contest with prize money.
So you chose three people to include in your book here, three of those who had written these mini autobiographies for the contest. Tell us who they were and why you chose them.
I was most interested in autobiographies that spoke a great deal also about life in Germany before the Nazis came to power, because what I had found in a lot of my reading is that the German Jews had the stigma of being only victims. Their whole existence in Germany was reduced to being victims of the Nazis, and I thought that was just not fair. I mean, the German Jewish community had a very long history and a magnificent history, and so I wanted to look at what was possible for Jews in Germany. When Bismarck created the German Empire in 1871, the Jews got full political and civil rights. So they won what they had long sought after.
In 1871.
1871. So this was actually a year after the oldest in this collection was born. He was born in 1870. So the doors opened. And in some sense, the period between 1871 and 1933 is the high point of the German Jewish community.
So high point meaning what? Could you describe it?
They had the most opportunity. All the legal barriers were now gone.
Like what?
Well, before, there was a lot of restrictions of what Jews could do. Movement. You could literally not be a university professor. You could not be a civil servant. And this was enshrined in the law. All of that dropped away. And so now the only thing really standing in their way was social prejudice, the kind of social prejudice that you would have found in this country at the same time. And the Jews were very optimistic that this kind of social prejudice would also erode over time. And so the legal barriers were down and they felt they had a chance to move into society like never before.
Thomas Dunlap says that one man who did just that, moved into German society with gusto, was Joseph Levy. Joseph Levy was born in 1870. When he was 25 years old, he went to Frankfurt to become a cantor at one of the large synagogues there. He was a teacher, and he served in the German military reserves.
He is, I think, the most Jewish of the three in both his identity and his involvement in the Jewish community. But ironically, he's also by far the most German. He constantly reiterates that he is German to the core. He's German in language. He's German in culture. He's a patriot. This is his homeland. He has no other homeland. And at times it's painful to read how much he insists that he is German because we, of course, know what happens to the German Jews.
And at this point when they're writing it, he doesn't know.
I mean, and that's the other interesting thing. The perspective of the writers is still very fresh in their minds. But they're not distorted by the actual Holocaust, which, of course, didn't start until middle of 41, really, the mass killing. So they're not questioning themselves, you know, oh, we saw it coming or we should have seen it coming. They didn't.
Tell us another story from your book, something that's illustrative of what life was like for these people.
Yeah, this is a little incident that I have read in several of the autobiographies. And I'll just read it's very brief. And this is from Joseph Benjamin Levy. This is what he writes. At a higher girls' school in Frankfurt, this was in 1933, the teacher wanted to demonstrate the main characteristics of the Nordic race using the students as examples. After compiling a list of characteristics drawn from the students, he called to the front of the room what seemed to him the best representative of the blue-eyed, blonde Germanic race in order to demonstrate to the class her obvious advantages over the Semitic, inferior mongrel race. At that moment, some of the students shouted, "But Anna is Jewish." One can imagine the embarrassment of the racial theorist who had made this disgraceful mistake in his demonstration. The exemplary German he had called up was the daughter of Jewish, genuinely Semitic parents. And there were several episodes like this recounted in other biographies, and it shows that even the Nazis were caught in their own racial madness and couldn't see what was right in front of them.
You grew up in Germany, correct?
I was born here. I moved there when I was 3 years old, and I came back when I was 19. So I grew up in Germany.
And I wonder, for you, there must be lessons on multiple levels, Thomas. I'm thinking probably personal, historical, societal. But what's the take home for you?
Well, my own interest in this material sort of goes back to I would describe it as a cognitive dissonance when I was growing up, especially in the 70s when I was in high school. It was a time when the Germans really started looking at their own past. It had been covered up with silence right after the war. But in the late 60s and 70s, a lot of the scholarship came out and there was a lot of discussion within society. And I remember in German high school sitting through a lot of these films about the liberation of the concentration camps and so forth. But when I looked at the society in which I lived, this was a social democratic society, it was a welfare state, which had great concern for the least in society. I found it very difficult to come to terms with that this society, and only 30 years earlier, had perpetrated this. So ever since, I have been trying to wrestle with this question of what had happened in Germany, because we also knew that we were still surrounded by a lot of people who were actively participating in this. So ever since, I have been kind of interested in this and studying it. What do I take away? I have really no clear answers. The more I actually study, the somewhat darker my view of human nature becomes, I have to say. But then I read something like Levy, who takes great pains to point out how a lot of Germans stuck by them until the very end, whether it was a doctor or their housekeepers or people they had known for many, many years, and that this kind of humanity is possible, but you have to resist the tide of intolerance at the very beginning, because by the time Hitler set up his terror state in 1933, very quickly, doing anything about it, reaching out to the Jews or anybody else, came at peril of your life.
Thank you for telling us your story and telling us their stories as well. Before the Holocaust is the title of the book, Three German Jewish Lives, 1870 through 1939. Thomas Dunlap, thank you.
Thank you very much, Lisa.
One of the life stories Thomas Dunlap includes in his book is that of a Jewish woman who was a political activist in Germany. Read an excerpt of her story and find out more about the book at our website, theworld.org.